Уважаемые участники форума, мы начинаем очередную сессию.
Dear participants of the forum, Russia, the world and climate agenda 2050. One of the most expected speakers of today, Jacques Andrey, head of the committee for the climate policy and carbon management. So let's kick it off. Good afternoon. First of all, I would like to introduce myself. My name is Andrey Melnichenko. Here, I'm a representative of the Russian Union of Industrialists and Entrepreneurs. I was a student at the Department of Physics at Moscow State University. I created my own bank in when I was 20. It developed quite well, and then in 2000, I started to work in industry. So, and that's what I have been doing for 25 years. So industrial business in mining area. So we mine 1/3 of Russian coal, phosphorus, kalium, and we produce fertilizers, a big company in power, big logistics company. So I have managed to build something like that for 25 years. So you can touch it with your hands. So the numbers of 15 years, we've the investment amounted to more than 1 trillion rubles. That's what I do apart from my leisure time. So I realized that the climate agenda and the climate regulation by the state will impact hugely the businesses I was engaged in. First, coal mining, as coal is one of the major source of pollutants and carbon emissions. So if you build a promising trajectory for your business and you plan your work for decades ahead, in real industrial business, you create something, then you do it for 10 to 15 years, and then you expect any result within 20 years. So in our business, it was clear at 2010 that the major risk we had to tackle the risks raised by global climate agenda. Since many states started to promote specific regulation measures, which either impact the demand for the products we produce or influence some competitive proposals to do something else in different way, to produce power in different way, to produce fertilizers in different way. That's when my personal interest emerged. 2015, there was a new legal framework for this area, Paris Agreement, and one of the parties to this agreement was the Russian Federation. Several years later, the Russian Federation ratified this agreement and started to implement these norms and regulations, the Russian legal framework. So long-term trends ceased to be long-term. So the development of the regulation impacted what was going on to the fate of Russian businesses, enterprises, how the economy of Russia would adapt to that. So the problem became large scale, not only for the group of companies I founded, but the organization I'm a part of, the Russian Union of Industrialists and Entrepreneurs, started to discuss that as it relates to everything. We kept on discussing that, and we decided to create kind of a coordination group, the Climate Committee. And this committee started in 2019, has been working. I'm head of this committee. We tackle the current issues, we try to analyze what is going on, we're trying to design our proposals, what can be done in interaction with the government of the Russian Federation at the different international venues to understand what's going on, to forecast what will be going on. And if you have enough ideas, we can try even propose and promote this. So this is the scope of my activity. As for the agenda of today's talk, sometimes I'm going to look at my notes, which I prepared at home. Why is it so important? It is claimed it is important globally. What the theory boils down to, that large-scale changes in the climate system is so huge that it will lead to big implications, rise in average temperature near the surface of us, is not that detrimental, but what it will lead to, intensification and the frequency of different natural calamities. Or maybe these are not calamities for someone. We see droughts and flooding in some areas. The frequency is going to rise. Some storms and typhoons and other detrimental natural disasters. Clear what is going on. So we have a planet, big area near the equator and a small area near the poles. So if the sun hits our planet near the poles, we don't see this hitting as much. The equator near that much, the poles are heated more. So there is a kind of difference in temperatures, intensified flow of these area masses. And that leads to these consequences, more wind, more intensified events. So when we started to forecast what it would lead to, it impacts the possibility for sustaining life in different parts of our planet. First and foremost, this is through the access to water resources, the backbone of everything for the agriculture, backbone for energy, sustainability for transport systems as well. And the second important indicator, the forecast demonstrates that the global sea level is going to rise, so the property near the oceans is going to be less, is going to be more vulnerable. So just look at the countries which are close to the sea level, like the Netherlands and such countries. So there is a concern about that. If there is a concern, we need to understand what we can do in this respect. So the discussion is about fighting the cause roots of that. There are two possibilities of fighting a disease. The first is to respond to the disease when it acutes. Second is try to find the root cause and to respond to the root cause. So the global discussion is about responding to the cause root of this effect. And the most interesting thing which has happened, it's all about theory. But why is it so important? There are calamities everywhere. There are a lot of calamities, viruses, aliens. So why is it different from the green agenda? Because it's about real money. The global GDP is $105 trillion. As of today, different flows of capital connected with the climate management amounts to 2 to 3.5 trillion a year. If you compare it with other figures, wars, weaponization, it's 2.4 trillion US dollars per year. The global education system is around 4.5 trillion US dollars. The healthcare industry is around 9 trillion US dollars. So the numbers of investment are comparable with the biggest things we go through every day in our life. The forecast numbers and figures, which should be growing to achieve some goals of this climate agenda, so it's around 10, 11 trillion US dollars by 2030. That's a lot.
This figure is four times higher. It's comparable to healthcare budgets, and this is the money. So we can speak differently, whether we should be concerned or not about the climate changes in the future. This is a matter of theory. We will come back to it later. But for sure, what we need to understand that this will not disappear from the agenda, because a lot of money invested by global investors, taking into account these events, and these funds are really big. They're comparable to other things. A lot of is being said now about the AI. $0.2 trillion a year. That's so far 10 times less. It shows comparably the scale of issues that influence the global capital market. What else can we say?
The global problem.
And how it's important for Russia. How relevant is it for Russia? Probably it is relevant, because if we look from two angles, if we look at the economy of our country, 50% of our exports, one way or another, are hydrocarbons. And if the climate agenda happens that has been developed in the world, it's give or take half of our exports should vanish, because the carbon neutrality means that nobody would need it. The second question is a contribution to the budget, let's say 40%, but I think indeed it's much more, because the vast majority of processing of what? Processing the feedstock which is produced here. So in other words, the climate agenda that until recently was mainstream, its implementation, which means that there will be no economy in our country at all. We can have other problems of today when we speak today. What's relevant for our communities tomorrow? The climate agenda is not so important. First, we come up with a special military operation, what happens around that, different consequences of global isolation. And, well, what climate agenda has to do with that? That's a question, and this question is not easy to answer. Everything will end some time, and this will end too. So to make sure the economy works, this used to be and it will exist in future. Also, being under the pressure of today's problem, we still think what will happen in future. Here we could say that whether it happened or not, what happens today, if the climatic agenda was developed a little bit differently. My personal opinion, probably everything will go differently. But this is about the past. Today we speak about the future, so I will skip the past. And about the future, I have the following thought. This is important, big money invested there, it will not change. Let's think about the future. Sorry for this long introduction. So what are we talking about here, basically? The climate system, everything is simple there. The sun is heating the planet, some energy is reflected from the surface, and if it all went to the space, it was a bit colder, 35 degrees, and the planet was not suitable for living. Why it doesn't happen? Because we have so-called greenhouse gases in the atmosphere. These are the gases that take and reflect some heat and send it back to our Earth. And that's why we live here like in a greenhouse. 50 to 60% are water, steam. This is a secondary effect. Temperature rises and it results in the growth of steam concentration in the atmosphere. So it's something secondary. It's not primary, it's a secondary. So the consequence of temperature rise. What's primary here? Primary here are other greenhouse gases like CO2, methane, nitrogen, oxide. Well, the scientists say that the changes in the concentration of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere resulted in some factors, is the main reason of temperature growth on the planet. There are no other disputes on that. There are some, of course, some marginal stories, but in general, this is more or less clear with the scientific consensus. Okay, the growth happens. Then the question, why basically this happens, and These are the pictures, the charts. This growth was started to be registered in 1970s, 1980s. You can see on the chart that the temperature growth goes along with the greenhouse emission. There are two figures, our planet and where do these gases come from? CO2, methane and others. 94% of that are natural sources, 6% it's emission related to man-made activities. 860 gigatons of CO2 equivalent in general is altogether that goes to the atmosphere, and 6% accounts for the human beings. The whole theory boils down to the fact that all those 6% is the reason why the atmosphere of our planet heats up. They claim that previously it was more balanced, but the economic activity of people and burning of fuels, no matter where, in power stations, in industry, on transport, resulted in this growth of temperature, and it in turn impacted the global temperature. What they started to do, the scientists started to study it and understand it in 1970s, and Soviet Union took part in it. They come up with the forecast I described, and they started to think, what shall they do on that? And it boiled down to two things, either to prevent or fight against those 6% or adapt and then look what and see what to do next. In the 1980s, there was a dispute in the expert community. The expert community keeps coming up with some ideas. Someone is worried about diseases, others about aliens, about starvation, education, a lot of concerning topics and relevant topics. Why this discussion about the global warming flew up? Why specifically this discussion resulted in the huge redistribution fund and other discussions didn't? What happened basically? Without answering this question, it's difficult to predict what will happen in future. So what means flew up? It boiled down here to a set of international treaties. The first one appeared in 1992. There was the Framework Convention on preventing climate changes, and it ended up more or less in 2015 by so-called Paris Agreement. Where was the result of all that, of this regulation? The result was that we would fight this anthropogenic pollution, 6%. What it means to fight? It means that every country emits something because they more or less all countries lead some activity. So let's set the task for 2050, 2060 to stop emissions on their territories. It boiled down to that. Let us move this direction. Okay. So far, so good, but there are first strange things appeared. Some countries, 6%, just let me remind you, 6% main factors. Some country has a big territory, it absorbs a lot, and most probably the anthropogenic emission is less than the emission. But anyway, you have to cut the anthropogenic influence. In other countries, there are very big pollutions. Non-anthropogenic character in some country. So we shouldn't reduce them. So in other words, the geography of countries and the opportunities that geography gave us don't take into account in this discussion. It's naturally in other industries. You have a cold country, you spend more resources for, or you have length, high length, a longer country, you need to support infrastructure. In this field, the ideology boils down to the fact that it's no matter what geographic advantage you have, let's pick what happens on top. The country that can be an absorber, not issuer, should deal with the reduction. That was the first interesting element that happened in this whole story. The second thing, it may seem that we need to reduce, but how to reduce? There are interesting questions. What about the climatic change? Is it good or bad, or someone take the benefit of it, some others not? For example, it's good for many countries. For example, Russian Federation. No doubt they are positive for the Russian Federation because the positive balance that happens from rising the ground temperature will increase the performance of our agriculture, new transport routes will be open, hydro resources will be more accessible, and in general the comfort level will be rising. Of course, there will be some exceptions, droughts in southern regions and heat, but this consensus will become a bit better. It will become better in other places also, not only in our country. But what was the result of today's consensus? No matter, we all fight against what? Against something that brings us good and many others. Well, it also happens, right? This is the second strange factor. The third strange factor, what does it mean to fight? Let's admit that in general in the world, it becomes worse in a less number of places, better. How can we compare those places? By population, by people living there? No, there are no methods for that. The question then, if we take this statement that humanity was the root cause of all those changes, who takes the responsibility? Is it the responsibility of the countries that made some economic transition due to the fact that they used fossil fuels and they reached economic welfare? Or is it the responsibility of the countries where the whole village throws away less than one refrigerator, like in the States, and who didn't manage it to make another economic conversion? Why then both of them should reduce having same economic condition when someone doesn't have to do with that? The consensus that appeared for tomorrow, it's not a consensus, just infrastructure of agreements. Probably such words as fairness and logic are not many there. Something just come up, and from the exterior, it's more or less good, okay, and the funds are being spent by both for whom it's good and bad. Well, this approximate like that where we arrived today. In other words, somebody would take the benefits from such changes, and others, these reforms brought just harm. That's what happens. Those trillions who change their direction in the end, this is about that. Somebody earned new trillions and others lost. That's how we call redistribution. Absolutely. The real event happened. And by the way, we belong to those who lost and significantly. Okay, second question, even two questions. How come that it happened and where did it come from? We understand the problem. We decided to fight it like that. And why specifically we arrived here? Probably here we should come back to the very beginning, to the origin. The idea and expert ideas that keep appearing all the time. This idea appeared in the late 80s. Who was the author to make it fly? The idea was what combination of the politician with high authority able to mobilize the community for some idea. But it's not enough because politicians come and go. Secondly, it should be in line with the interests of some strong states, because a strong state, due to its architecture, is fighting for its security, whether economic, the ability to support its activity, or any other security, for example, analytical probability to provide some analytic insights. If there is a politician, and if there is a security issue, and third, if there is economic benefit, such ideas come to reality from just talking. If there is only one factor, then we call it a populist politician. If somebody discussed about security but don't have money, it will not end up with anything. So all three preconditions should come together. And they came together. It was a very interesting period of time. I'm speaking about 1989. There were two events. A big change happened of political events in Western Europe. What happened there? The leader of the Western world was changing. President Reagan went, the new President Bush entered, and big changes happened in the Western Union. The Soviet Union was collapsing, and the politician with very high politician, the leader, was Margaret Thatcher. First, this topic was very close to her. She was a chemist on this first education, and she knew what she was talking about. Second, it gave very good agenda for the Great Britain at that time. First, the common enemy disappeared, the fight against the risk of mutual annihilation, against the global war. Other things were needed to mobilize the security, the society. The climatic change and something which was out of control had very good chances for success. And on top of that, it was beneficial at that time for its internal agenda. She would lose power after 1 hour, but at that time it was important. She intercepted part of the electorate from traditional leftist parties like Laborists and others. So the politician came up to the scene. And the main speech, Margaret Thatcher, was in November 1989. But it was not remembered well because on November 9, 1989, the Berlin Wall fell, and the news were filled with other things. But that was really fundamental for media hindsight. Block number two, economics and security, and why security here matters. We should look at the interests of different countries. What kind of countries were there? At that moment, the world was unipolar. Soviet Union disappeared, so no big principles happened. The principle was, let's stay like the West, and they didn't have their own opinion. Only West, it was unipolar, and so all discussions were circling and existing in that world. And what centers were there? Like England, Europe, where was Europe? And the United States. What was their position in politics at that point of time? The Europe was facing the following question, which was developing. It had a question of how to combat the disappearing of their reserves. It was clear. The forecasts were there, but what happened? There was always the question to provide energy, to feed the industry, to feed something, but it was not there. What shall we do? We should seek for the model that would answer this question. That was the opportunities to produce electricity without fossil fuels like wind or solar, that was the response. Approximately the same happened in the States at the same time. It happened a bit slower than in Europe. Why? Because there was a balance between Democrats' positions and Republicans. It always they are uncertain, like uncertain agenda. But it boiled down to this principle the same. The US are absolutely dependent on the fuels and to keep ships in the Gulf. It's a bit scary because they have some good memories about growing prices in 1980s. That was the same challenge as in Europe. It's good to replace. And more or less consensus agenda was developing, but less speedy as in Europe, because the economy was ahead than in Europe. In Europe, they have ideology, here they have economics. In other cases, it developed in a different way. They were all floating by gravity, and it happened before Trump. The previous term of Trump, because at that moment two events happened. In the US, there was the shale revolution, shale oil revolution. the country started to change its direction from imported to it turned to export. And being an exporter, the national interests change. Why you need to combat with something that you want to sell? This, the country starts to turn, and on top of that, the security issue that I mentioned. There was an economic question, of course. If we think about that climate, what's unique with climate? Unique means versus other global threats. Everybody is concerned about the access to medicinal water resources. How do you solve it? On the ground, somewhere on the ground in the state, you should do something.
As for the global climate, you need to fight it in national area to reduce emissions. This kind of a contribution to a big global challenge. Apart from the security issues, there is another point, the point of economics. So what do we imply? The European Union said that we had the second opportunity by the climate agenda, not to tackle only climate issues, but to develop new industry, to produce wind energy tools and solar panels. So we will have demand, domestic demand. If this agenda is promoted by other states, our European companies can become new leaders in this new area of industry. It is about security and about profit. That was the strategy of Europe. The United States was trying to do almost the same. For example, Biden Inflation Reduction Act, subsidies, and the support of these areas of economy. The same happened during the Obama term. That was the logic behind that. Two goals, security and economic benefit. That what it was about for these states. How to sell this profitable agenda to the rest of the world? China. In 2011, 2012 was not that big leader which shaped its own meanings. It was okay about following this system of economic growth driven by the economic order promoted by the West. It was quite pragmatic and beneficial for China. In this respect, China, step by step, was following this agenda. It declared it was going to do that, but there was no rush. When did it start to reverse? In 2010. What happened? Actually, the same thing happened that had happened before in Europe and the United States. China started to understand that the access to the energy resources is about the energy security. So the backbone of China, of the energy mix, was coal. So the 200-250 depth of coal mines. Right now it's 1.2 kilometers. So the access to cheap energy started to diminish. Second point, the import rose, the import of the liquid fuel. By 2014, China found itself in a different situation, a situation compared with that of the EU. So it started to promote this climate agenda as well. China adopts the same strategy. They call it 2025, and they said that they would build new industries which would meet the demand for decarbonization inside China. We will create the industry of solar and wind energy. We will create e-vehicles. That's what they said in 2012, 2013. So they followed the strategy of Europe, what Trump said about before his first term. He looked at this climate agenda and said, guys, it's not beneficial to the US anymore. We don't need that. We started to export power, and we will not earn on that. China would get these markets. And Trump said that it was not according to the national interest. That's why he withdrew from the Paris Agreement. That's how the world developed. Then Biden joined agreement. It was kind of a controversial issue. So if the Republicans wanted to act in one way, so Democrats wanted to act in the opposite way. So where we are right now? We can speak of other countries. The EU stayed the same position. The United States withdrew because they understood their national interest was different, and they got back. because Biden was always against, and now they have withdrawn again. So they said again that this agenda is not interesting to us. We would like to distract this climate agenda as it goes against our national interests. That's what the US says today. And China, China, major leader in this agenda. Why? Because it is beneficial to China, and it creates, starts using the opportunity which was used by Europe and the United States. This is soft power. So you keep on saying that you are for the greater good, and you find your own benefit, and that's what's happening globally. If there are any other important countries in this agenda, probably not. There was Global South, so a big number of poor countries, they supported the previous agenda. Why not? Nothing required from them. They were promised some money, so why not? So nobody would turn that down. How is it happening right now? It's a kind of disappointment. The money they asked, the money they expected, haven't been received. Talking about the figures and numbers in 2025, 100 billion per year made up. So last year we had 13 only. In other words, this group of countries received almost nothing. That's how the world works and where we stand at right now. Though this accumulated pool of controversies led to the foreign situation, the agreement is not followed. So the major task of the agreement was to keep it within 2 or 1.5 degrees compared to the pre-industrial. We have reached 1.5 is already, so we are getting there. So the meteorologist says that we are already there. It has happened. Second point, nobody has reduced emissions. The figures were supposed to be around 45% reduction by 2030. It will be only 2% compared with 1990. So we are going through the crisis situation. The climate order is in no need to anyone. The US doesn't need it. Why will they do what they don't need? It is still a need for Europe, but they are slow to understand that. It's difficult for them to change the reverse trend. It is in big need for China because they have launched a big industry. They will be doing that since they need to secure their energy risks. So the Global South is not satisfied with anything. That's where we are, the crisis of the Paris Agreement. So what does Russia have to do? Get back to the question where we were this agenda. We were not in nowhere. We regarded this agenda as Global South. So we joined the agreement, but we did nothing. We had numbers, figures. We took some responsibilities of carbon neutrality by 2060, 80% reduction in emissions by 2040. If we compare the energy mix, so to fight ideologically the globe, in 2015 there was a consensus. It was useful. It wasn't a useful thing at all. That's why we joined the agreement. That's how I can characterize our position on that. But it turns out sometimes something is done that something bad might happen. But then the life adjusts the situation. What happened in Russia? We became the members of the Paris Agreement 2017, 2018. There were a lot of willing parties to create some kind of opportunities for participating in such Paris Agreement. Why wouldn't we decarbonize our economy? We have some extra money. Why shouldn't we substitute our hydrocarbon energy using renewables? Why shouldn't we replace our petrochemical and metallurgic industries with something hydro-driven? Why in our country producers of hydrocarbons shouldn't do something to kill this domestic demand? This idea should be financed. There should be carbon regulation. We should levy tax on those who emit and give it to those who reduce. You know, when we look in our union at that, it was like crazy idea.
Это примерно так плюс 80-100% роста.
It's 80-100% growth in power, cost, transport. Why not? Everybody loves to receive money. Somebody receives money, somebody spends money. There was active activity. We saw interesting companies leading that, Rosnana and Mr. Chubais and a number of other guys. That was happening. This was unhealthy trend. What did we do? We tried to fight this trend through science. We arranged scientific community. We looked at the figures and numbers, reports, how these emissions and described in Russia. So we just adjusted and reviewed our national statistics with a huge number of specialists engaged.
It's
paper under the auspices of the state proposed by the Union of Industrialists and Entrepreneurs. So our emissions was 1.7 trillion of CO2 and it 50% reduction. That was the case. We couldn't just count them well. So that's the logic behind. It gave us an opportunity to avoid extra costs for the economy. So what are we doing? We're doing the same. It's a feeling that going through the second round of looking into the current situation in Russia, these figures might be even reduced from 900 to 200. We're not tampering. That's the real situation. Due to a number of reasons, our reporting was not sufficient. That's what we are doing. So we're trying to tackle other elements associated, non-human made emissions from the permafrost. We have a hypothesis that new non-human made emissions, when started to emerge as rising global temperature, are such considerable that they just set off any capabilities of humanity to fight it. But we need to talk about that in 3 or 4 years when we have scientific conclusions. That's what we have been doing all these years. So we have been doing what has been possible. You cannot fight wind. So there is a global agenda that you need to take care of what goes against your national interests. Okay. That's how we been doing. We have been trying to survive in this situation. We're talking about future, forum of future. The crisis happened. So the world, with one rule, it was defined, doesn't exist anymore, it was over. It's going to be a different world. A different world boils down to a group of states. I don't know how many of them we're going to see, which will have an opportunity to shape their own agenda. Support and promote, this is what multipolar world looks like. Whether the Russian Federation would be one of these countries would like to see that. We have 1.5 global GDP. Leadership is going to be 5 to 6 countries. We have serious questions. You need to have money to be a leader in this area. Question is simple. That's one part of the question. The second part of the question, to promote any policy of yours, where are we right now? We're at stage one, fight for multipolar world. This is the right to say whatever you want, following your national interests, not to follow the interests of other countries. Trump is doing the same, China is doing the same. We're the same world. But the first stage is the same. You need to destroy what happened before to have the right to do something on your own. Right, we do it in a smart way, in a silly way. It's happening today. But the question is, what comes ahead? So you have the right to do something, to express something. Then there is a natural question. So what do you want to propose? What do you want to do following your interest, in the interest of your population, of your country? And why following this interest might be the interest of any other party? If you cannot find the answer to this question, this multiple world is great, but we have nothing to do with that. So the right to express your ideas, but these ideas should exist in the first place, and they should be shared by someone. So the second part, getting back to the climate agenda, It was a group of countries, a big group of countries. So the agenda was destroyed. Economically powerful countries, interests which align, but ideological leadership is not the case. They haven't shaped the clear understanding. What are these countries? These are the countries which economy is associated with the access to fossil fuels. You either have it, and it is an important part of your economy, or countries which might have access to these energy resources, which can be used in many areas of life. There is a group of countries. That's where Russia belongs to. Second group of countries, they overlap sometimes. These are the countries where the consumption opportunities and emission are in positive balance. Countries which emit and consume less than other countries, they have an asset. They have an opportunity either to increase emission in their national currencies or to exercise the right for emission by other countries which are not capable of that. So either you have some natural resources and to implement the projects on consumption or something else, or you have a fossil fuel. So these are two groups of countries, and our country belongs to these groups of countries. So who are these countries as well? The Arab world, all those countries which have fossil fuels, OPEC plus Africa, not since they are for something else, because they do not emit a lot since their economies are at low level, a lot of people, but emission per capita is very low. But on the other hand, the continent and opportunities for climate projects are huge. So this is a strange group of countries. There are other countries, for example, Brazil belongs to them, Latin American countries. So there is a group of countries with the current order replaced with the just logical and normal, natural, they would have common interests. It's a unique opportunity. Unique opportunity is that you can do something which is extremely beneficial for you and it is just and equitable for others. Should be a focus for these countries. That's where your strategy should be built on. It's your own benefit for your country, for your national interest. If it is just and you don't have to impose through force and trick on other countries, this is where the strategy lies. I believe that we might be fit for this role. We have fossil fuels, we have natural assets which allow us to sell and implement this service as the emission reduction, or to have investors from abroad, the activity of which is connected with the emission of greenhouse gases. So these two advantages should be converted into economic growth, into the prosperity of the population, into the economic unions or with other states. This is a huge challenge. That's one of those challenges which should be tackled apart from emissions. Thank you very much for your attention.